And welcome to another episode of the Ninja Consultant Podcast.
Episode 10...
Lies.
12?
70-something.
I don't know.
Well, when are you going to put out your Black Lagoon show?
Soon.
How soon?
Maybe it'll before be out episode? Before this episode.
Maybe. But we have a special request from a friend.
It's me. I'm the friend.
He bought us a new mixer when our mixer broke. for a wedding gift. It was awesome. Thank
Many
you.
Many happy returns, by the way. I don't know if you've had any guests since the day.
But on the show?
On behalf of all of your friends, congratulations.
Hooray, thanks.
Yeah, we're here with Mr. Carl Shiny Hands.
Hey!
No.
Not really. This is Chris, and I guess we can use your full name, because your full name's on the comic site. It's Chris Anderson.
Yes.
Who is creator of Ego and the Squid, a webcomic running now 4 years? 5 years?
A little bit more than 4 years.
Oh, right, my mistake. A little more than 4 years. I remember when it was just 100 strips old.
Yeah, that was, it's been quite a run to think they said that this wouldn't last.
Who said that?
Yeah, no one said that.
Show me who said that.
Whenever I say that, I'm quoting Michael Jackson, R.I.P., and no one, I feel like it's such a pop culture moment. It was like at an MTV Music Video Awards, and then he came out with his wife, Lisa Marie Presley, said, "To think they said this wouldn't last," and they kissed, and it was so weird. And then
wow.
They got divorced.
I missed that. But this show, not about Michael Jackson, about web comics. We're going to break from form a little bit, and kind of related, since...
Yeah, there are no... I'll give you the anime tie-in at the top of the show.
So go for it.
If you're totally not interested, stop listening. There are some web comics that became anime series lately, at least one, Hetalia, which is really popular now, as we discovered at Otakon. Hetalia is a comic about World War II era countries as represented by cute boys in an all-boys school, and there's a lot of like yaoi nonsense and a lot of comedy, like America's always eating burgers and...
Ha! Hilarious!
No, that's a classic zing.
France is sleeping around or whatever, like the usual kind of thing. But it's really popular with girls, so it's getting weird to go to cons now, because then you get a bunch of girls dressed like Nazis, carrying around huge German flags.
Yeah.
Or that might be cooler, depending on what you're...
I don't know. I'm kind
what
of...
What your
I'm a little torn.
Noah's a little weird, because we had a bet going, like, does Hetalia make girls more interested in world history, or in World War II history, or, like, not interested, and they're only interested in the yaoi?
Yeah, well, they said yes.
Yeah, we talked to a group of cosplayers, and they were really into it. And
I should have quizzed them.
They were
whatever.
Dressing for, like, their heritage, like the girl who is Swedish or whatever, dressed like Sweden.
Yeah.
And the girl who was China was like, I wanted to be something else, but my friends made me be China, because I'm Asian.
Too bad.
In any case, Hetalia started off as a webcomic, and then it was eventually collected into manga volumes, and it became an anime series this year. There's another really popular webcomic in Japan that's Tonari no 801-chan, or maybe it's 801-chan.
Oh, I didn't know that was a webcomic, though.
Yeah, it started as a webcomic. About...
Because it was definitely in manga form, because Ed showed it to us.
Oh, yeah, because it got collected as volumes, and I own a volume. I don't know if it was supposed to become an anime, and it hasn't yet, or something like that. Or maybe they were making a drama. Huh. Either way, it made that leap from webcomic to anime.
Right.
Webcomics are also really relevant to anime conventions, like... A lot of webcomic artists will take a table in Artist Alley, and apparently that's what did the best, what the word on the street was in Artist Alley. Otakon this year was, in previous years, prints sold really well. Mm-hmm. Like, your hand-drawn poster of Naruto would sell best. And this year, because people were kind of saving money for specific items, people who already had an audience for their webcomic, people who were fans of the webcomic would come in, meet the artist, buy a book, but like they'd set aside kind of that sort of money to buy the book of the webcomic they already like. Instead of buying a bunch of posters of people they just found.
Right.
That's what I heard. So I think... And there are some webcomics that have, like, an anime influence. Like
many.
One of the first ones I read, definitely.
But Chris's comic is Ego and the Squid, and he should tell
us... Viewable at drsquid.com.
Oh, that's right. It's...
That's the
like
URL.
Like, spelled out? Or
yes,
like,
yeah, it's not DR.
Right.
Go for the full word.
We would not endorse Chris's webcomic on our podcast if we didn't think it was great.
But it is.
We're not just saying that.
It is quite excellent.
Loads of cash or something.
Well, thank you.
You should check it out. But
it is really funny.
What is it about? Tell the people.
It's about a man that is based on me. It's a self-insertion comic, which is always a bad idea, but It's the one I had, and so I had to stick with it. And he's a roommate and friend who is a squid, and sort of dealing with realistic problems and unrealistic problems. You know, monsters, ladies, unemployment, living in Brooklyn, all types of issues that you may or may not be able to relate to.
Right.
It's not a strict autobiography, though.
No.
He's not, like, in a band.
No, he is in a band.
Oh, he is?
And that band is my band, and it's me. But, you know, it's inspired by real life, but it's not, like, strictly speaking, a diary comic.
Right.
Right.
And the squid represents his id or something?
Maybe. Ooh. It could be considered that sort of a universal stand-in for conversations that I have with other people, but in generally tends to be the less inhibited character.
I guess that's true. And he's frequently your sort of your anti-conscience. Mm-hmm. He's like...
Yeah, the devil on my shoulder.
Yeah.
The anti-conscious.
Conscience, yeah. Conscience. And frequently sort of deflating you.
Yeah, I think webcomics are... Or should we talk more about what your comic is about?
Well...
I think that covers it.
That covers it. What are your opinions on webcomics today?
I think... The webcomic scene right now is very exciting. I think there's a lot of really good comics out there.
People often ask us, like, what webcomics we read. That's, like, a big listener question. They always want to know.
What do you read?
Yeah, what are some ones you read?
Read Akewood. I'm a huge fan of Akewood. Penny Arcade, Dinosaur Comics, Kate Beaton, or it might be called Hark a Vagrant now.
Yeah.
What else? Order of the Stick, Toothpaste for Dinner, Natalie D, and Married to the Sea, which are all sort of linked. Nedroid, Cat and Girl.
I mean, to read more Cat and Girl. Like, the strips I read of it, I liked. But I don't like, I don't know, when there's a big archive of comics, I like reading it in book form,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to sitting online and reading
right.
it.
Right.
Well, she does have books available.
What do you read, Noah?
What do I read?
Yeah, for like the millionth time.
So I read Penny Arcade, Order of the Stick. I think everything that I read is subsumed by what Chris reads, pretty much.
It's like a smaller subset.
Yeah, it's a smaller subset. And I guess Skin Horse, which I should plug.
Yeah.
Shannon Garrity's new strip.
Shannon Garrity is a big writer for Otaku USA magazine in the manga section. She also helped write Manga the Complete Guide. And I am familiar with her previous webcomic, Narbonic.
Narbonic, which I was not a very big fan of, but...
People kind of passed it around Sci-Fi Club when I was in college.
But Skin Horse is really good. So that's updates every day but Sunday, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
She has a really consistent output.
Sometimes she just does, like, sketches.
What about you?
Wait. So we met the Earthworld guy at Otakon.
Oh, yeah,
did
Earthworld.
You read Earthworld now?
I haven't read Earthworld since the first volume has sort of concluded. But very interesting. I don't think it has a very big readership, but it's...
It's a little bit, I want to say esoteric.
You think?
It seems to largely be based around not just gaming, but, like, game theory, which I think is kind of an obscure
To a certain
topic.
Extent.
Is it like a
game
fantasy
mechanics.
Comic?
Hmm?
Wait, so does it take place in a fantasy game, though?
Yeah, it's not like a dungeon master that gets sucked into... Not even just a role-playing game, but almost like a miniatures tabletop, like,
right.
turn-based strategy game.
Right.
I pictured him becoming miniature. I think that's its own strip. I'm 1 inch tall and now forced to play this miniatures game. Anyway.
Yeah, it's just sort of an alternate reality, fantasy-based reality, although lots of pop culture seems to leak in. But it's surprising because you actually get a good story. Which one would not really expect out of a comic that's taken sort of the tact of, yeah.
I mean...
Words fail me. So
it's really easy in that one to end up, you know, losing the forest for the trees sometimes. But I think overall it does have a solid storyline that is worth checking out. Just every now and then you're going to have a couple. I felt like there was a lot of exposition in there.
There's a lot of exposition, and it was sometimes difficult to understand exactly what was going on with all of the heavy rule jargon. It might be easier for people who were fans of turn-based strategy games, which I really don't play them that much, so I'm probably not the audience. But there's a lot of good character stuff in there, and it's really thought out, and the characters are complex in a realistic way, which, again, is not something that you'd expect from... A comic strip essentially based on a video game or a style of video game. So I really am impressed with both the art and the writing.
And that's one of the great things about webcomics is that you can make something like this is for an audience of fans of turn-based game systems. And you can have something that specific because, you know, there's such a low entry fee.
Yeah, anyone can put it up, and anyone does.
It's true. There are tons of webcomics, and it can be such an intimidating world to like try and find your way through if you're just sort of getting into it, because there's a lot of dreck out there. One thing that's nice that seems to be a habit amongst webcomics creators is they all link to the other comics that they like.
Yeah.
And so it's really easy to, once you find one that's good, to sort of just hit their link section. And
yeah, it's really easy to be like, oh, I like this comic, and then that artist probably also likes people like that, or of that level of quality. For the ones that I read, mostly only Penny Arcade. I used to read more dinosaur comics. I read like the first arc of Order of the Stick, but then I kind of stopped. I'm really inconsistent about reading webcomics. Like, once in a while I'll catch up on Chris's, or our friend Derek's is A Kick in the Head, which I really like. That's more like a New York Diary kind of stuff. A lot of the jokes are about, you know, different subway lines or whatever, like really kind of New York specific jokes. A lot of like his Bagel Man is a very regular character, for example, which is only if you're in New York. Does that
also New York bathroom specific, which is why I don't tend to read it. too many panels devoted to the bathroom.
I like XKCD a lot. A lot of people read that. I wasn't really convinced at first. Like, I wouldn't really have gone back and read their archive, but people kept linking to very funny ones. And then Perry Bible Fellowship is really good, like the book that came out. But I guess he doesn't do it anymore. Like,
yeah,
he stopped.
I think he stopped.
And I didn't really read Akewood, except for I got sent a book to review.
The Great Outdoor Fight.
That would be the one.
And I did really like it. Like, I hadn't really read Akewood before. Oh, and also on our shelf is Fart Party.
Oh, how can I forget Fart Party?
I
finally started checking out some of that Fart Party your recommendation, and it is solid.
Fartparty.org. Unfortunately, I've kind of been stalking the creator of Fart Party, but let's not talk about that. Or maybe we should talk about that.
I can't think of a better forum for talking about
that. She moved to Brooklyn kind of recently, but she was really writing specifically on the comic and in the related blog entries, like about specific cafes near our apartment that she was frequenting. She kind of moved to a different neighborhood, but I was sort of like, then she was writing about another cafe that she went to, and while I was unemployed, I was like, I should go to this cafe and see if she's there drawing. Eventually, I did meet Julie Wirtz, but I got a book signed, but I was too afraid to talk to her, and Noah wasn't there. The thing was, it was like a panel at a bar, and there was like a drink minimum or whatever, and I hadn't really eaten much that day. Like, I had a really light breakfast, and then I had a really intense Bloody Mary, and then another drink. So by the time I got my book signed, I was kind of drunk, and I was too shy to say anything. It was just a disaster. Like, meanwhile, two other people were talking to her, and they were like some cool couple, and they're like, yeah, we have so much in common. And that's what I think too when I read her book. I'm like, wow, I have tons in common with this person, except for she sounds like more of a jerk than me, which is probably true, or like she's saying the things I'm only thinking.
Yeah.
In any case,
well, that's one thing that I think you'll see in a lot of webcomics where people set up straw men and then be like, this is what I should have said.
That's what Derek's kind of started off that way too. I think she's also more of a shut-in, and she makes a lot of comics about that, where like people invite her out all the time and she's just like, no, I'm going to stay in my apartment for days at a time. There was a point in my life when I was like that, but not in the last 10 years. In any case, so this other cool couple at the signing who were getting their book signed as well, borrowing my pen to do so. So there was an ample opportunity to talk to them. They were like, yeah, we should hang out. We live in the neighborhood, blah, blah, blah. And Julia was like, yeah, I can tell now that you guys just aren't creeps from the internet. So whatever, draw me an email. And I'm like, crap.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking, I am a creep from the internet. The creepiest. And so I didn't really say anything. I took my pen back and left.
I saw her on a panel at Mocha. It was the how to make good comics in bad times, about getting comics published during a recession. And she was on the panel with, I think, one other comics creator, sort of self-published comics person, and then a bunch of publishers. And everyone was giving their little introductory bit, and it got to her, and she was like, I just want to point out that my book was rejected by all of the publishers on this panel, but Random House picked it up, so you can all suck it. And the audience kind of laughed half-heartedly. The publishers were mortified. She's just as big a jerk in person as she is in her comic.
She draws herself more ugly than she actually is in real life. Like, she actually looks kind of pretty and stylish, but a lot of her comics are about how she dresses like a bum. At one point, she buys a used hat and a new coat, and her brother's like, hey, you going out west? She's like, what? He was comparing her to Fievel.
Yes.
Because she's very short. And got a Fievel hat. Anyway, she in real life, she's much more stylish.
Yeah, and she's another autobiographical comics writer.
Definitely. I also like parts in a book where, like, she's blacked out some bubbles or dialogue to be like, too personal. Not putting this in the book or on the internet. But that panel stays in somehow. Anyway.
Yeah.
No, it's a nice touch.
Those are the webcomics we all read. I want to mention that Carl Horn reads Penny Arcade.
Oh, Carl Horn reads Penny Arcade.
Yeah.
Well,
I think it's the only webcomic he reads.
Yeah. Well, AWO is the only podcast he listens to. I guess he has one of everything.
Right. But only the best one.
Well, oh well.
Oh.
Daryl Surratt can have him.
I know, right?
And have Carl Horn.
Well, if our show had more facts that Carl Horn didn't know, maybe that would
then be a draw. We'd be in trouble.
Oh.
I don't want to be that guy.
That would be crazy.
I want to live a nice, happy life. I don't want to be the person who has more facts than that Carl Horn doesn't know. But what do you think makes a good webcomic?
Wait, can you hold that thought?
Oh, wait.
File. All right.
Oh, okay, save it.
Do you have strong feelings about Ferengi? So I think the Ferengi are great in DS9. They really fleshed them out, and you learned a lot about them.
You learn a lot of stuff that you don't want to know about them. They flesh them out to be annoying characters.
They are not that bad. Quark's pretty cool.
Do you like Star Trek fashions?
What about Jake Sisko? He has the coolest fashions.
Do I like the overalls the best or the little vest? It's really hard to pin it down.
Yeah, his outfits are fantastic. I love them all.
Do you feel like Deep Space Nine never gets the credit it deserves?
I think everyone gave up on it before it became its own show.
You know, myself included originally, and I'm glad I came back.
Yeah, I went away and came back, and the whole Dominion thing brought me back in. It's very good. It's got great characters.
It is, and the more I watch season one, the more I'm gaining a new appreciation of it.
If so, join us for the Gamma Quadrant, the only podcast dedicated to all things Deep Space Nine. We discuss the series episode by episode every week. Our podcasts are available on iTunes and on our website, gammaquadrant.libsyn.com. And Libsyn is Libsyn.
So we're talking about what makes a good webcomic?
All right, so what do I think makes a good webcomic?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of really vague, you know, but...
Well, what do you look for in a webcomic?
Well, I look for a unique voice. I mean, the same thing that you'd look for in almost any art. You want to see the artist's individual stamp on it. If anybody out there is considering making a webcomic, my advice to you is try and make it as much unlike anything you've ever seen as possible. Or as much like yourself as possible and tap into your own sort of unique identity. And that's definitely what I look for. Like, if you read Akewood, which for me is probably or my favorite webcomic, there's such a unique voice there. And a lot of that has to do, I think, with the slang, which or the style of dialogue, which I hear... for a lot of the characters has to do with like a very specific regional slang near Malibu.
Yeah, I didn't get that at all when I read the compilation. I was like, what is this weird slang? Like, why does every character have a strange slang?
It's because they're all from someplace near Malibu. And
didn't know Malibu had so many accents.
Yeah, but no, he definitely does a great job of giving all his characters sort of a unique voice. I think and that's the most important thing.
They're stuffed animals, right?
Yes. Well, it's sort of complicated. It started out with them just being maybe based on his stuffed animals, and then they lived in some sort of bizarre alternate universe that was in some way related to the human world, because they're not just stuffed animals. Some of them are like one of them runs a record label, Ray Smuckles.
Right, right.
You know, and at one point they break into Yahoo, but that Yahoo is populated by humans. It's tough to say. This is not a comic that I look to for a strict continuity.
Yeah, I found out a lot about it, like, reading Wikipedia. Oh my god, I just remembered one that I used to read all the time that I couldn't read at work, and so I didn't read Jerk City.
NSFW.
Jerk City has been around, like, forever.
Forgot about that.
It kind of has, like, the kind of characters that are pre-drawn and then placed in, but into different backgrounds. You get really experimental. The jokes aren't that funny on the surface, but once you read a lot of them, then you start to get it.
Right.
And it's usually disgusting.
Yeah, involving cocksucking, usually.
Yeah, usually that's, like, not really the punchline.
Bong chongery and fong bongery.
Yeah.
It is very funny, and what they seem to do, because it is like a group of people, they take their chat logs and then...
Yeah, like sometimes it seems like it's pasted directly from IRC.
Yeah, put them into panels.
And I think they use like an old-timey computer program that came out that was like, make your own comic program, use these characters that...
Oh, the one that was like from when Penny Arcade had that on the bench thing?
Yeah.
Or the same kind of thing?
Maybe, but those are some weird characters to be stock characters from some...
Yeah, like, but then there's also like Beatnik, Talking Terrier... Like, they seem like they could be, like, if it was a program that had, like, a ton of archetypes, and they went to the bottom of the list.
What's Pants,
though?
Who's
drawing that? Yeah, Pants is some kind of alien.
He's, like, the Argus.
I like Pants. Pants is my favorite character in that. Where he's just always kind of alternately screaming or pleased. Like, there are only two moods for any situation. Like, maybe he's confused is, like, his third emotion. With the stock characters, like, I guess we should mention, for people who haven't read Dinosaur Comics, it's the same strip every time, and only the dialogue changes. And there are three characters, but occasionally the artist brings in the voice of God or the voice of the devil by drawing a line indicating dialogue is coming from off-panel.
Or Batman's floating head.
Or, yeah, what is that?
Or Mr. Tusk.
Mr. Tusk.
The mayor of Tiny Town.
Yeah.
It's really good, yeah.
He's in a tiny bit of trouble.
Invisible elephant.
I know. Well, he's not invisible. He's not really small.
He's very small.
Professor Science.
But honestly, why don't...
The raccoons that live next door.
Right. But I don't read Dinosaur Comics as much as I used to, because it's a lot of text often. And like...
I've been reading the same reason why I don't read Order of the Stick either. It's
because
not that much text.
My ideal webcomic reading experience is typically at work, in a job where I'm very bored and have a lot of time on my hands. But I've worked a lot of jobs lately where I didn't have a lot of time on my hands, and I was not bored. In that case, I want to look busy, so I don't want to look like I'm sitting there reading webcomics all day. So if it takes me 3 minutes to finish reading your strip, there's more of a chance that someone will walk by and think I've just been sitting there reading webcomics all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think Chris's comic is very text low, and so is like fartparty.org. Specifically, doesn't have a whole ton of text usually. Sometimes it does.
Yeah,
but
fartparty does.
She explains she got into comics because she was like sick in the hospital with something that she doesn't really go into details with, but she couldn't focus on long passages of text, and so people were loaning her comics to read or bring her comics because of the short works she could pay better attention. So I think Fart Party specifically often has a low amount of text. Order of the Stick is like not only a lot of text per panel, but several rows of panels. And I don't read that fast, and it takes me several minutes to read it. It just looks like it's like reading a novel.
No, and I think, I mean, Order of the Stick isn't so much a strip as it is a page of a comic book.
That's true.
To the point where I'd rather just read it in a book.
Well, you can.
If I didn't have like a two-read pile of comics that was like
right, well,
larger than my
You have the ability to do so because it does exist in book form.
Yes.
And we own some of them, or all of them that have come out, I think.
Indeed. There's a lot we can discuss about webcomics. Like, for example, how long have you been running your comic?
My comic has been running for a little bit more than 4 years now.
And how did you start? Have you gained a lot of readership who are people you don't know in real life? Is there not really a way to tell?
Well, I can sort of tell. I know that, I mean, I can look at my advertising service, Project Wonderful. It's really good. And it'll tell me how many hits I get per day and how many of those are unique IPs. But it's tough to say, like, how many of those are unique over, say, like a week. Whether that's somebody that comes in and reads an entire week or...
Do you get a lot of comments from people that, like, you don't know?
I get a handful of comments. My commenters are largely people that I know, but a handful are ones that I don't.
Are there like a few regulars?
Yeah, there are a couple.
Yeah, that's kind of
shout out to AWM and Bash Iron Fist. I don't know why you people don't have normal names.
They're ridiculous
online. The internet, man.
It's true, because that's been kind of my experience running online websites. Because before we did Ninja Consultant, I did another project with friends. I don't know if I actually want to name it, but we did eventually. We drew people who were fans of that other kind of site. It was like a site like Forum 2000?
Forum 2000.
Forum 2000 or...
True Meaning of Life.
True Meaning of Life, or the other one that was, I want to say Ascatron.
Yeah, something like that.
Before people could put a lot of audio and video on the web, there were more boring forum sites that were aimed towards humor.
People came from that site to the podcast. Like, you don't think that Meat Beagle is going to out us?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he totally
Because there are
will.
Some people who like started off, who were our regular followers on that website and then followed us onto the podcast. Like, so there are people who we've known in air quotes for like 9 or 10 years who we've never met from this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but I do find it a little bit, it's more easy because we do a lot of conventions. Like, it's easy to meet listeners who find our table and are like, hi, I listen to your show. And then we know for sure that, like, but I just recently set up Google Analytics. And I have, like, a podcast feed counter that tells us, like, generally how many people. It's really dropped as our output is dropped.
Yeah, people love consistency.
They do.
Also
and
true for webcomics.
That's what I wanted to bring it around
don't blame
to.
Them.
How consistent is your webcomic?
It's 5 days a week, every week.
And you have, well, you missed one day almost.
Almost. Well, there was one time where my computer broke, another time where I think I overslept. This is before I had it set up where I would post them all at the beginning of the week, and then they would just be sort of revealed as the week progressed.
Right. Mm.
And one time where I posted the same comic that I had posted a couple weeks ago, and then found out in the middle of the day and had to replace it.
Oh, I didn't even know about that time.
Oh, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
So.
Do you think it's really important for readers to stay consistent?
I think so. I mean, there's nothing I think a little more frustrating as a reader than clicking back on your favorite webcomic a couple times a week and seeing the same comic that you've seen.
Right.
And being like, where's the new one? What are you doing? What's going on? I mean, a lot of people try to get ahead of the curve and have sort of a big archive or a backlog so that they can, you know, if they fall behind a week or two, they can sort of play catch up. Whereas other artists sort of just make them as they come. And
yeah, I'm remembering a long time ago I used to read a depressing webcomic called Bruno, but eventually I got sick of it because whenever the creator didn't do a strip, he would like write in the box where the image would usually appear a long and like whiny excuse about his pathetic life and why he couldn't post a comic this week, and eventually I'd stop reading it because reading the excuse was worse. Like, I would rather see no update than a long whiny update. And I think Order the Stick used to do that too sometimes, where the guy would do a blog post like, sorry I haven't posted
that's
in 2 weeks, I had cancer.
Well, to be we don't know if that's true.
I know.
He does have to periodically go into the hospital and he misses.
It's a good excuse.
Time, right. But that, no, it wasn't when he would miss like several weeks.
Yeah.
And if you miss several weeks after updating consistently, you owe your readership an explanation. It's not.
We used to release podcasts more frequently, and at that time we had more listeners.
Right. Well,
now you're down to the true fans.
We've got other stuff going on.
None of those fair weather friends.
Right. Only the diehard zealots.
One thing with podcast feeds, it's also easier where it just like when you update your.
Well, the same
iTunes
is true, I
up.
Think, for webcomic feeds because
yeah,
Order the Stick in particular doesn't update on the same day every week.
Yeah,
and you don't have to worry about checking back because whenever he updates, and sometimes it'll be a really elaborate strip that he's taken a lot of time to put together.
Yeah, that's
and
fair.
It just it you get it as soon as it's released.
Also, between 1998, like when webcomics started really taking off, and like now there are RSS readers and stuff. And now I subscribe to some comics like on RSS, so I can just like on Google RSS reader it tells you if it's unread like.
Yeah, that's how I...
Almost like email.
I read them all.
Oh, do you?
On your
No, you read them on my LiveJournal friends page, which is different. And one reason I don't read webcomics as consistently is I used to check my LiveJournal friends page every day, but during periods of unemployment, I feel it's very unproductive to read the LiveJournal friends page for hours at a time, and so I tend to avoid it.
Mm.
Or I get overzealous and friend too many people, and that happens on Twitter also, where I'm like, all of you people look interesting, friend, 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 and then it's too much work to read the feed. So then I avoid the feed because I feel it's wasting time. So
modern dilemma.
Yeah, that's why I don't read as many webcomics.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's why I don't use a feed. I just check.
No, you have.
And also,
now.
I hate technology.
But I forced because my brother is your webmaster.
Yes.
Nepotism. But I forced Matt to set up a RSS feed for you after like a year or two.
You
which
are
is when
on
I
feed.
Started reading.
Yes,
your...
but I don't use one for myself.
Oh, I see.
Oh, you don't use
sure.
a reader.
No.
You just go to the individual sites.
Yes.
Do you have them all bookmarked or
and
something?
No, all up here. Because I had the same habits every morning, so I'd be like, just start at the upper left of the keyboard, qquants.com for dinosaur comics, and work my way across.
What? It's QWERTY. You have one for W and one for E and R.
I don't. The next one that I used to check out was I for Isotown, which was a really interesting comic. It was sort of about this fictional town, and it was done from an isometric view. And, like, there were no characters.
I don't even know what that means.
Like, sort of a diagonal bird's eye view.
Huh.
And it would just be like, oh, look, there's a new building in town. Someone parked their car in the parking lot at the taco place. It was really weird. It was like watching somebody else play Sin City or something. But I'm not sure if he still updates, but it's something that's... I would say it's an interesting experiment to go and read through those archives.
Hmm.
That sounds crazy. What was that old-timey one that I have hung on the fridge where they're ordering a beer and they're like...
Wondermark?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
One
I haven't read much of it.
Definitive old-timey comics.
Is that like a genre of webcomics? Old-timey comics?
Well, the only ones I can think of that along those lines are Wondermark and Married to the Sea, where they both seem to use maybe public domain etchings and art and then just put new text over it.
Then there was the one that Warren Ellis was doing that was like Edison Hates the Future. I don't know.
Is he still doing it?
I don't know. Years ago, it was over July 4th at Tori's house.
Oh, that's right.
But she showed me those. They were okay funny.
Oh, what about Alien Loves Predator? Do they still do that? Where they're like photographing action figures?
I think that one's still kicking. God, there's another good one. That one's photographing like Legos and miniatures. I can't remember what it was called. It wasn't Idiot Comics. Was it Idiot Comics? I don't know. I know Idiot Comics was good. So it was Irregular Webcomic. That's what it was.
Oh,
so they don't post consistently, and they let you know in the title.
No, they do post consistently.
Oh, it's a lie.
No, it's irony. It's postmodernism.
An unreliable narrator.
But Idiot Comics is also pretty good. I haven't read that in ages. I should look that up.
Hey, guys, we have to tape a promo for our show. In 20 seconds, tell us what the Anime Roundtable is about.
Well, the Roundtable is about a Canadian perspective on issues revolving around anime, manga, and fandom. As well, we got the bullets, and why not some final insults to send it all off?
5 seconds left.
Really?
Lollies, Nazis, train molesters, bakake, and the women that love them.
Time's up.
Are we allowed to say that?
Well, it is uncensored. It's the Anime Roundtable, the official podcast of Anime North. Look for us on iTunes, Podcast Pickle, or your favorite podcast directory. Or look us up online, www.animeroundtable.com. The Anime Roundtable, where we edit for time, not content.
Have you ever been to... You haven't. Like, Kineticon is a big convention in Connecticut that celebrates webcomics specifically. Like, there are other fanish things. We've never been, because, I don't know, whatever. We were never invited as guests.
That's true.
Right. But apparently that's a really good con if you love webcomics.
Yeah, in Connecticut, that's
yeah,
your...
Yeah,
that's
like a double whammy.
You heart Connecticut.
Yeah, quick shout out to the Nutmeggers.
Or so I've...
Just get on a train.
So I've read.
Yeah, number one.
On a tattoo on your chest.
Check it out. Get a table there.
I will. That is a good idea.
I think it's usually this spring. I'm not really sure.
I also... After spending all that money on a table at Mocha, I don't know.
Well, Mocha's really expensive. That's
it's
like
true.
A real con for serious business artist.
Like me?
Yes. It's a tough sell, though. Because people at Mocha, like... I think Mocha... Okay, Mocha is the Museum of Comic and Cartoon Art. I think we've talked about it a lot on our podcast.
We have.
And the Mocha Festival is like Stumpy Town or Ape, where it's an independent kind of press convention. And it's really awesome. But I think it's filled with shoppers of two types. There are people like me. I don't usually want to talk to the artist at the table at all. But I'm that way when I shop for anything. If I go into a store and someone's like, how can I help you? I'm like, by standing over there where I can see you, and if I need help, I'll ask. And I never actually say that to store clerks. I'm usually like, thanks, I like looking, or it's okay, I don't need help, or whatever. But I hate hands-on help in a store. often. So when I'm browsing through comics at a convention, I don't want to hear about the plot of the comic, because then I feel like it's a pushy salesperson. And if you're pushing me to buy your comic, then that, it doesn't...
Yeah, the hard sell does not
work
very well.
It doesn't work, because that means that your comic's probably not very good. So that's why you have to do a hard sell to make me buy it.
But at the same time, right, from the other side of the table, the experience that I had was...
Oh, yeah, but I've been saying there's the other type of shopper are people who constantly approach your table and ask you what your comic's about. And then you have to explain it to them in, two sentences or, under 30 seconds and pitch it to them. Because they want the pitch. They want to know what it's about. I want to flip through the comic and find out for myself. And if I'm like, holy crap, is that a talking octopus? I'll ask. At that point, I want to talk about it. But that's right. The other type of shopper is,
From my experience, the people who are going to just look at your comic and they don't want to talk to you, they're either going to buy it or not, whether or not I try and say hello. Whereas the other people, I have to say hello to try and, pull them in. And so you've just got to start pitching at everyone and just sell, and no matter how obnoxious it makes you look. And that's why I was not very good at it. My friend Scott, who does a really good web comic called New Feelings at pinkdresson.blogspot.com.
It's not a very memorable address.
No, it's not. Hopefully when this is done, you can put them all in the show notes.
We will.
I think you're right in the show notes.
But he was a much better salesman just because he comes off as a genuinely friendly guy, because he is where I'm. So right. I'm genuinely curmudgeonly and just want your money and approval.
Do you even want the approval?
Yes, but I don't want to have to ask for it. I want you to come to me.
So we're sort of like an intimidating Kim's Video Store clerk, is what you're saying.
No, those don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They're a dying breed. Where it's I don't want to have to ask them where the Bergman films are, because they'll just laugh at me and tell them it's in the Swedish section or something. Which I've probably gotten wrong.
And they'd be in the auteur section.
Damn it. It's really hard to find videos again.
Not anymore. There's one left, right?
Yeah.
There is still one left.
There's one that just has sales.
The one on St. Mark's Place?
On First Avenue. The one on St. Mark's Place closed in December.
Oh, the First Avenue one, is that replacing the Avenue A store?
No, it's replacing the St. Mark's one.
Oh, man. Oh, what's going in there then?
Probably a
Japanese
Baby
restaurant?
Gap or...
Oh. Please selling those O strollers.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me save this file again. All right, I once went to a...
That's your unplugged version.
I once went to a graphic novel symposium called Splat, where two of the notable guests were the author of Diesel Sweeties, who also looked like the biggest hipster I'd ever seen, and I think Ted Rall.
Yeah.
And what's his comic from The Village Voice?
Yeah, Tom the Dancing Bug.
Tom the Dancing Bug. It's all political comics.
Ted Rall, if you're listening... I don't like you.
He doesn't like anyone. He was the bitterest man alive, but he'd become very chummy with the Diesel Sweeties kid, because the Diesel Sweeties guy had made the jump from just a standard webcomic to being syndicated in newspapers. But Ted Rall was very upset, because there once was a time when, in order to be in this certain exclusive cartoonist club, you had to be in thousands and thousands of newspapers, and now there's so few comics in newspapers and so few newspapers that it's a moot point. Also, I think Ted Rall was really upset because the rate he was being paid had not increased since 1978.
Well, that's what Linda Barry said.
And Linda Barry also says that about her print comics, and so I think that is good information. That also a lot of journalists complain about the same thing, that the page rate that the word rate they're being paid for news stories has not increased with the times in the last 15 years. So, but I think a lot of people our age, their first exposure to comics was newspaper strips, because when kind of floppy comics of the pamphlet size, as they call them, were taken off the newsstands, unless you went into a comic book store to buy one, usually your first exposure was reading strip comics.
Mm.
Was that not also your first exposure?
No, that definitely was.
Yeah, where I did that too, where I would run and get the newspaper and read the comics first, and that's it. That's all. I'm still kind of like that.
Yeah.
Or only watch The Daily Show or that kind of thing. And then when I was in third grade or so, I started reading compilation books of Garfield, and then later Far Side and Calvin Hobbes. And so this natural sort of progression. But those were all newspaper comics. And I think kids today don't really have the same experience of the reading the mass strip that's so popular and everyone reads it. Like, there'll never be another Garfield fad, right? Like, there was a time when everyone had, like, a suction cup Garfield in their car, or a time when everyone in the country read Calvin and Hobbes. But I don't think it would happen nowadays. Like, there's not that kind of character that catches everyone's attention and becomes, like, a national icon. It wouldn't happen nowadays.
Well,
or those characters would not come from newspapers.
No, I don't think that I'd be very surprised if they came from the newspapers. But we're in a sort of transitional period as print media slowly dies. It's
slow,
horrible,
painful,
yes,
terrible death.
Drawn out death.
It's going to come back. It's all cyclical.
Really?
Retro newspapers?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
After that Y2K bug kicks in. Also, say goodbye to your podcast.
Still waiting for that, huh?
It's always really amazing to me when I read about the history of comics that there was a time when strip comics were so important that when a newspaper strike took place in the country, it was like the mayor of New York or maybe a president or something who read the newspaper strips that weren't being printed, like the comic strips that weren't being printed, over the radio to the public so they could hear what their favorite characters
were. Oh, yeah. That was during the Depression.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember who it was. It might have been Roosevelt.
But, like, that is...
With his fireside chats.
Like, that seems kind of crazy nowadays. Like, you know, if the next Diesel Sweeties wasn't online, my life would not end. I would wait another couple of days.
Well, we now have a skillion media outlets.
Yeah.
Indeed, in this country, you cannot escape them.
Right, so now if you were a newspaper man going on strike, what would be...
I don't think anyone would notice.
No.
Yeah. And in fact, for all I know, they've been on strike. Mm. You couldn't prove it by me.
Nope.
I don't think so Walter Cronkite died last week.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Never be another.
Well, I...
Maybe not.
In Sweden, they call Anchorman Cronkiters.
We also heard that.
Tell me this morning.
Yeah, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
I heard that on Sunday morning last weekend.
I did not know.
So, well, I've known that for a week.
Yeah, we're talking about webcomics. You don't need to listen to me lament the decline of journalism and integrity.
Right. Okay,
and
so there was a time when if you were the guy who was drawing Doonesbury, you were like a rock star. You know,
Gary
you'd be
Trudeau.
Like interviewed on talk shows and made a really solid income because of all the syndication of your strip. But that's no longer the case. Like, I don't know. Gabe and Tycho have that really big convention. But the Penny Arcade's kind of like the top of the crop, where when they do like a... They've done like a charity around Christmas for what? Toys for... Not Toys for...
Child's Play.
Child's
is
Play.
What it's called. Yeah. Yep.
Where you're donating things to...
Hospitals.
And it's like a huge success, like bringing in millions of dollars or whatever. So clearly, like, they have a huge readership.
Yes. Yeah. When E3... when they decided not to hold them anymore, although I guess they started again or something, the entire video gaming world turned to Penny Arcade and said, so you're going to host the next one, right? You're going to step in and fill this essentially worldwide professional video gaming convention, and your webcomic has enough of a draw that you are going to step into this role of facilitator.
I mean, they were already
an entire industry.
They were holding PAX already, right? The Penny Arcade Convention.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were used to having a con.
Yes, but this is
not. Yes, not for the whole industry, like a fan con.
Yeah, that was already what, like 4 or 5 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
That was when I knew that they had truly arrived. Was when they were asked to host. Yeah.
Hoisting on the shoulders of the world. Save us!
Riding in on a palanquin.
Yeah, or I'm just terribly afraid of these robots. And I mean, in modern Japan, I mean, that's a legitimate thing. It's like, what if you were a human dancer who specialized in the robot? Japan has robots that can actually dance and do the robot.
So you'd be like, the time, my time has passed.
Yeah, it's like, it's over, dude.
Our age is over. It's like the elves in Middle Earth.
Yeah.
They all get on the boat and sail away.
All the breakdancers are like popping and locking on their way to lands to the west. Gandalf is like there with like a sideways hat and a gold chain on. He's like, alas, Frodo, this is my last freeze. And they like busts out.
He gives him his cardboard.
Yeah.
Never forget me.
Breakdancing Gandalf. Maybe you would have been able to stop the Balrog without getting thrown into the center of the earth.
Yeah, without getting punked. And everybody thought you were dead, man. You couldn't pick up a phone?
Dave and Joel's Best Karate for the Gentleman.
The anime podcast for people who don't like anime.
Or podcasts.
Find us online at www.daveandjoel.com.
I was going to recount how after college I had a job that I didn't really have to do that much at. That seemed like I had a lot of free time.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the internet was very heavily blocked by a firewall to the point where like any site that you went to too often would run the risk of being blocked. So if there was a webcomic that I liked, I had to not share it or with anyone or mention it to the other people at the company, because mm-hmm. if they were all reading it, it would be blocked within a couple of days. And that did happen with Penny Arcade, where I'm like, what do you mean you don't read Penny Arcade? And then all the guys who I worked with were like reading the entire archive in the course of a couple of days, and like making jokes from it and sending around the comics, and then the site got blocked in like 3 days. And there's no real recourse for that. I was reading this webcomic for work. You should unblock it. Which I think if I learned
morale, for morale right, purposes.
For morale. Otherwise, we would have all committed suicide by now. But in the end, I think I learned not to work at that kind of company.
Yeah.
Because it's miserable. Like, I thrive better at companies that know that the internet is a vital form of communication and not just a waste of time. I think it's kind of going more in that direction now. Like, now, as the young person in this new company, I'm expected to be the one who knows about, like, Twitter and Facebook and blogs, and they're like, can you write our blog entries and do our Twitter account? Because we don't know what that is. We're old, or whatever. But they do know that, like, because Twitter is in the news so much, that it must be important somehow. It kind of is. So that's kind of the opposite of being like, you kids on the internet, you're wasting your time.
Like, yeah, because they know that kids have all the money now. It all goes back to those dollar bills, y'all.
Uh-huh.
Let's How much see. Are you guys getting for this? How much am I getting for this?
Our podcast.
We get nothing! Nothing! Nothing at all!
Alright, so we're kind of going to recommend comics, a couple that were bad, how to start your own webcomic. Does anyone even really care about that? Webcomic conventions, of which we only know one that's really webcomic heavy.
There was another one that was set up by the guy that does Wigu and Overcompensating, Jeffrey Rollins. He runs Topato Co. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's sort of this mega store where he's gotten together all different big web comic artists, and they all sort of sell their T-shirts and swag through him. Like,
oh, I've bought it.
Goes to them.
Yeah, I bought a shirt through there once.
Yeah, and he set up like a New England comic something.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, almost went, but I didn't.
Aw.
Because I'm...
But you are a New England comic something-something.
No, I definitely am. I love both New England and comics, but I think I was broke and found out about it too late. And apparently tickets sold out really fast.
Hmm.
Maybe they just had a small venue, but...
Huh. Oh, I had a question about, like, you briefly did stand-up comedy, right?
Very briefly.
Did you have, like, training? Like, did you take a comedy class or something?
I took some improv comedy classes.
Oh, okay. And, like, in college, right?
In high school.
How many times did you perform?
Like 3 or 4.
Oh, okay. Do you think you learned stuff from improv comedy and from, like, your stand-up routine that apply to humor in your strips?
I think I learned more from doing sketch comedy than I did from stand-up.
Oh, okay.
Because it's more dialogue-based, but I think you learn a good sense of timing that way. That's another thing that I think translates really well from studying film, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, storyboarding and comics are almost completely interchangeable. And doing live performances, I think you learn how to that you need to satisfy your audience. That you can't let it slide. You get the awful feeling in your guts when things aren't funny that maybe you don't when you're just, you know, writing
drawing
a comic and shooting it out into the ether.
Hmm.
Yeah. I think it's like a glass mask type lesson where it's like, she didn't learn to respect the audience.
Well, I just think it's funny that it's kind of like if most unfunny webcomics, they just don't get comments, right? Very rarely is it the case that they get a whole string of comments like, your strip's just not funny, dude. You suck.
I mean, if you want to...
Yeah, I wouldn't leave a comment. Like, if I was reading a really terrible strip, I'm not going to, like, be a jerk and be like, wow, this is really unfunny. I'm not going to, like, email the author or leave comments or, like... too bad there was no punchline.
Yeah, apparently Julie Wirtz gets those a lot, if we are led to believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, or that is what we are led to believe, where I'm thinking of two different things.
Oh.
She does get those comments, but then there is a Kate Beaton strip that is about fan mail she received, I guess, that was like, wow, you're pretty funny for a girl.
Whoa!
Yeah.
I've heard girls aren't funny.
I've heard that said.
Hitchens wrote that article.
Wait, so that it kind of does bring up an interesting point that, like, most webcomics that we read are humor-based in general. Even Order the Stick, there's a lot of drama, but there's often a punchline.
No, it's clearly, yeah, it's humorous.
It's comedic.
It's humorous.
But they have serious moments, too, where, like, characters die and get resurrected. Yeah. But for, like...
Yeah, but it's played for laughs, I mean.
Right.
Well, I mean, not that the character deaths. That's never played for laughs.
But what are you getting at?
You know, it's a broader medium, like... People could just be putting their superhero comic page by page online. And I think some people do that, but those aren't the ones that get read the most.
No, I've seen a couple of pretty good... Well, I can think of two good drama strips that I used to read semi-regularly. I think part of it is that webcomics are pretty much in a strip format.
There's also a massive thunderstorm going on right now. It's very exciting.
That wasn't that bad.
Webcomics are still in a strip format.
Yeah.
For the most part, and it's harder to build drama in three or four panels. The drama strips I'm thinking of are called Voids and Scene Language that are more dramatic based, and they tend to also look more like a traditional comic page. Mm. And they're also, interestingly enough, both written and drawn by women. I feel like women are more comfortable doing dramatic voices in comics.
Huh. I mean, truly a lot of people read manga cancellations online, and that's the whole page. Or now there's Viz did Ihi Comics, and they're doing like more web reading things. And Mariko Takahashi, her latest comic is also online around the world for free in a kind of webcomic viewing. Unfortunately, it's about a girl who can see ghosts and a guy who helps like send ghosts to the other world. It's like Bleach, but written by
Rumiko Takahashi, yeah.
Is there sexy comedy in it?
Not much.
Forget it.
Not yet. Yeah, she's kind of really lost the sexy comedy edge.
Maybe she's getting too old.
Unless you find half dogs sexy, then I guess Inuyasha is like the sexiest thing ever. Like,
well, there's sexy comedy bits in Inuyasha.
There are, but the new one is Rin-A or something like that.
Oh.
Rin-A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last time you mentioned that, I hadn't seen anything from it, but now
I think
they're
like four chapters online. Yeah. But there is kind of a push towards all comics being online first and then in print second. I don't know. Most of this discussion has just made me nostalgic for newspaper comics.
Really?
Where if you think about like the number of times, like, have you ever been like in someone's, like, in an office or like in your school or in a doctor's office where people like cut out the newspaper strip and they hang it on their fridge or on a bulletin board? I mean, people still do it with web comics. You just print it out at home and you cut out the strip and you put it up in your cube or whatever.
My mom does that with my comic.
Ah.
It doesn't turn yellow the same way.
Well, no, it doesn't, but I don't know.
You could get newsprint for your...
Hang up web comics. There's a Penny Arcade comic hanging in the kitchen.
Several.
But I don't know. I really... Even the good... newspaper comics were never really that good.
You are dead wrong.
Yeah,
no, I'm dead right. While we were alive?
Yeah, Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
The Far Side. Peanuts.
The one with the penguin character. You know what I'm talking about.
Penguin character.
Bloom County. That was in our lifetime.
You're right. Since 1990? How's that?
No.
It seems like... Look,
nothing
I'm just saying, weekend after weekend, I would read the comics in the paper, and they sucked. They were painfully bad.
Foxtrot.
You know, I was never a big Foxtrot fan.
Oh, but, I liked it because it was a
Mary Worth.
No.
And it's
Prince
awesome
Valiant.
No, Prince Valiant was the
Prince
worst
Valiant
of the lot.
High and Lois.
I'm not.
No, you're naming bad comics.
Yeah, Ziggy.
Hagar the Horrible. Literal, very literal with that name.
Horrible comic. No, I just couldn't, and I don't understand how they are still around.
For better or worse?
Still exist. Not for much longer. For better or for worse, going out. She's wrapping it up.
Family Circus.
Ugh.
There are a lot of really insane Family Circus strips that you should really see.
I like, apparently the guy who draws them,
Bill
Keane?
He's
like amazing as a public speaker, like hilarious with tons of off-color jokes. But the comic's not
good. No, he knows his audience, and he knows what he has to do to, you know, be able to be printed in so many comics, and that's middle of the road. Milquetoast. Don't offend anybody. And that's
thumbs down.
I like Linda Barry's description of her reading Family Circus, where she talks about how her family, where she grew up, was so terrible. Like, they were really poor. There was always blood on the floor for some reason, and it might have been a family member's or, you know, a chicken that they'd butchered or whatever. But the point is, everyone was fighting all the time. It was terrible. And when she read Family Circus, she was like, that's so amazing. Like, how could such an ideal family exist?
Well, she described it as peering through a keyhole.
Yeah, like a tiny portal.
Into someone else's much better life.
Yeah, into a better reality. And when she finally met the author, she, like, cried.
Yeah, she burst into tears. And it's actually...
Because she was introduced as a fellow comic artist.
Right.
And then she cried because
she
made it.
The way she put it, it really kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
Because she said that... It seems silly to believe that comics have any real power. And yet, her life changed for the better because she drew pictures. Because she was inspired by those Family Circus cartoons, she felt as though she was able to sort of step through the tiny keyhole.
Yeah, she reached through the page and had gotten out on the other side of the portal. Which is really amazing, and she tells that story every time she speaks, apparently. Because I went to two of her panels.
Linda Barry does not write a webcomic, but she should.
Like, her comics should be on the web.
I would read it, yeah.
She mostly does, like, books and print. But when I read Family Circus, it was like reading about another family that was more boring and less funny than my own. So, what was the point?
I just thought they were weird.
They're not good.
Yeah, it was nails on a chalkboard for me.
Yeah.
But that was the case for... It's all plain vanilla. Really,
they're better to read now because they're almost like anti-comics.
Ooh, I like that one web thing where they like have Garfield strips, but they've taken Garfield out. So John
Garfield.
Yeah, where John just seems like deranged. Or no, don't they just take away his thought balloons?
I've seen a couple of different things like that.
Yeah,
there's one where they take away his thought balloons that I actually did a guest strip for called Arbuckle.
Oh.
And then there's one that's Garfield without Garfield where they get rid of Garfield entirely. Then there's also Lasagna Cat.
Yeah.
Where they like short films that are based on or adaptations of Garfield strips that then devolve into crazy music videos. And those are also all worth really checking out.
Oh, I should check those
out. Live action. Or the ones I've seen are live
action. Yeah, it's just like a guy in a weird Garfield costume.
Suit. Yeah.
And the guy that plays John looks absolutely frightening and terrifying.
So they're better than the CG Garfield film from 2005.
Oh,
well, they're different.
Yeah.
One of them does have Bill Murray.
What difference does that make?
What, Bill Murray's in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a Ghostbuster, Noah.
He was a Ghostbuster.
He still is going to be a Ghostbuster again.
He's done a lot of good things.
Yeah.
I thought it was... Okay, so one
that
of the...
That doesn't make Garfield any better.
One of the people I worked with at my last job, like, who was someone I didn't meet, I think it was a sheet timer on the other side of the U.S., but he had been in the animation business for a really long time, and we sort of got talking about, like, whatever he'd worked on, and he said he'd worked on some of the Garfield animated series, and I was like, oh, wow, did you work on the Halloween special? Because the Halloween special is very memorable, where it scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Where there's a part where, like, an old pirate turns around in the chair, and it's really scary.
Yeah.
I think he had worked on that, and then I was sort of like, wow, someone who worked on something I remember.
here's a funny little coincidence.
Yeah?
Lorenzo Music did the voice of Garfield in the series, right?
Right.
And then Bill Murray did the voice of Garfield in the movies, and Bill Murray was, of course, Dr. Peter Venkman.
Peter Venkman, right.
And Lorenzo Music was the voice of Peter Venkman in The Real Ghostbusters.
The Real Ghostbusters, and they had that episode... where they actually see the movie of themselves that is the live-action movie.
Mm-hmm.
This was in the first season. And you hear the first few lines of dialogue, and Peter Venkman in the cartoon says of Peter Venkman, Bill Murray, that guy sounds nothing like me. Of course, R.I.P. Lorenzo Music. He also died a few years ago. Too bad.
It's
wonderful voice.
Yeah, great voice actor. Real laconic.
Is there some other angle that we want to... I guess I want to mention how in the sort of greater history of comics, like all comics, it's kind of, don't they usually in print media, they start off as strip comics, and pamphlet comics that we think about now, the way they are now, evolved out of strip comic compilations into thin volumes, and then eventually thicker volumes, and then longer format stories kind of took off from there. So to talk about strip comics is kind of talking about the history of comics, but apparently now we live in a golden age of reprinting of old strip comics from newspapers. Like,
it's true, a lot of great re-releases have been coming out lately.
Things that were well before our lifetime, like Terry and the Pirates, and like really
Little Abner,
golden age classics of strip comics.
Melvin the Monster.
Not familiar with that one.
I know Hal showed it.
Yeah, Hal has a lot of that.
Hal is a big
It's mostly people
fan.
Who work in comic book stores who buy these compilations, as far as I can tell, or people who work on comics professionally. So do you read a lot of old strip comics now, or?
Yes, I definitely do.
Like, in compilation books?
Yes.
Do they inform your current comic?
I think so. I mean, I feel they're so great that you can't, you know, you'd be a fool not to look to these things for inspiration and just be like, oh, because like they're not on my computer, or they weren't made within the last 20 years.
Or you can't get them for free without going to a library or something.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're all worth checking out.
Like, which ones?
Definitely, it all sort of begins and ends with Charles Schulz for me and Peanuts. They're so incredible. So much pathos and consistently funny. And the fact that he was able to do it every day for like 40 years, literally never taking a day off.
But they're only like 15 years they're good, right?
Well, even his worst years are better than a lot of pretty much almost anything you'll see in a comics page now. And yeah, I would not write off any of it. But it's also interesting to see him, like, sort of...
And good God, 15 years. It's like, oh, there was only 15 good years.
Well, I feel like when I was a kid, it just wasn't funny. Like, I didn't get it. I don't know. If I read them now, I guess I might get more of it. But a lot of Peanuts strips I read as a kid, like, I feel like I didn't get the joke. Mm-hmm. Whenever it was, the joke wasn't hitting me.
I mean, a lot of them, they're sort of... There is no joke. And a lot of them, like... You can appreciate more in the compilations. He'll sort of harp on a theme for like a week, where it'll be more or less like variations of the same punchline. But it's just sort of interesting to see him try and like work out. They're almost like what if fictions. Like, what if this punchline, or what if this strip had this punchline? What if the strip had this punchline? And it's, you know, the same sort of setup each time.
Anything else?
Any other?
Yeah, like what do you read old comics that not everyone would know?
Let me see. The Fletcher Hanks reprints that came out a little while ago.
What are they? Like, what's the name of the...
He was one of the original superhero artists working around the time when Superman came out, I guess.
Yeah.
And he did stuff like The Super Wizard Stardust.
Oh, that.
And
yeah.
That is a really good book.
Yeah. Big Red, King of the North Woods, what Star was, Cashman, I don't know.
Yeah, what was the superhero?
Super Wizard Stardust.
Was that him? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a really good reprint of a very old comic, but that's like comic book pages. It's not like strip comics. Oh, were they in the newspaper as well?
No, I think they were put together in, you know, books that had names like Space Comics and, you know, Wizard Comics.
Like the chapters are often shorts, but they're strangely drawn.
Well, it's
sort weird stuff.
Beautifully dated.
Yeah.
Because it's really dated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
like four color
the
printing.
Artist his grasp on basic anatomy is kind of questionable.
And you can tell that he frequently just redraws the same pose over and over, like the equivalent of using just sort of cutting and pasting for modern webcomics, which is, for me, the worst thing that you could do. And
wait, so you never cut and paste your stuff? You draw it all freehand every time?
Yes.
Probably makes you a better artist.
No, it hasn't.
You're like, actually, my art's getting worse.
That's not true.
I mean, I've improved from
things.
The first year.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, you hit plateaus and you get past those. You'll be noticing a new ear design in the upcoming years. I'm very excited about.
Well.
You heard it here first, folks.
All right, that's a big reveal.
But the Super Wizard Stardust one, that's like, it's hard to read it with the sincerity of the audience that I think it was intended for. Like, it is ironically funny.
Well, I mean, he is sort of an outsider artist, and I'm not... And
but he was a paid comic dude. He was making his
but
living.
But that was also at a time where I think the nation was sort of gaga for comics. Like you were saying, the president reading comics to people over...
Yeah, when there was, like, a huge demand. And
yeah, so, like... And they just had to crank them out, no matter their quality, and, like, his would be, like, second story fillers within a larger book.
Yeah.
They're all sort of incredible, and they're, he's sort of, they have this deranged morality where he's like, normally
he always gives what for to like crooked company presidents and mafia and stuff.
Well, he does, but sometimes it's a little over the top.
Yeah, and like takes their skeletons out of their skin or whatever. Like,
well, one thing that, like, normally, like in a comic, there'll be a villain and he'll be like, I'm going to kill millions of people, and then, you know, Superman, whoever, will fly in and stop him. Whereas in a Fletcher Hanks comic, somebody will be like, I'm going to kill millions of people, and then he'll kill probably a couple hundred thousand. And then Stardust will come in and be like, fuck you, and like throw them into the sun after ripping their skin off and turning them into a giant head.
Yeah, he does throw people into the sun. What was the one? He's not just taking them to jail.
The people who, they were going to invent an anti-gravity machine, mm-hmm. so everyone would fly up.
Fly off the earth, and then they could take all the rich stuff.
Over. Yeah, they could take over because everyone would be flying out into space.
Do they have boots or something? Yeah. Then what are they? Who are they spending that money on? It anyway.
Doesn't matter.
No, they're going to be the richest people. They're going to get all the jewels, and they are running the biggest racket.
Doesn't go well for them.
No. Then Stardust shows up, and
it's all over.
I think throws them to a golden octopus.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's kind of an ironic twist there.
He's kind of amazing. The guy who compiled that book, we went to his panel at, or did you go?
No.
He just released
a second book.
Oh, yeah. He had a panel at San Diego Comic-Con, like, a couple years ago, and I know, like, that probably sold more books, but it was really amusing to hear him, like, read samples of his pages, the guy who compiled the book, not the author. But also, like, the family of the artist, like, are not really people who read comics or on the scene at all, so they just think it's kind of weird where the guy who compiled the book is like, let me have all your dad's old stuff. And they're like, that old crap? Why would anyone want to read that? But it is an excellent book. Yeah,
because it's totally deranged and definitely worth reading. Other old strips. I've been trying to read a little Dick Tracy lately because I'm working on something that's noir based as a side project that's actually going to be in print, which is, I guess, nice. But I mean, I feel like for the most part, really good comics are rarely ones that you haven't heard of.
Yeah,
like this, I feel like, at least for strips, it's a medium where cream rises to the top.
Yep.
Especially at a time when they receive such national exposure.
Oh, for print comics?
Yeah.
So if you were going to pick one up, you'd be better off picking up a book that's, like, of a strip that you've heard of.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's very little obscure things that I could recommend.
Although not really, not everyone who's under a certain, most people have probably not heard about Terry and the Pirates.
Probably not, although it is running, isn't it? Terry and the Pirates now?
I don't know.
I know that it
definitely was when I was living in Denver.
Like, I've never read Little Orphan Annie or anything, but
It's around.
Yeah, it's still kicking.
Compilations.
Who does that?
It's not still going, though. Like, the original creator is way dead, right?
They sometimes just pass it on.
Yeah, it's like the next, their son or whatever. That was true of Hagar the Horrible, right? Like, if you read the original comic by the original dude, it's actually funnier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Family Circus, I think, might have been passed on at some point. Jim Davis, of course, farms out all his work for Garfield now.
Or Blondie still comes out, but it's, like, way past, maybe third generation or something.
Kathy's still written by Kathy, which is nice.
Oh, God.
Yeah, which is nice.
And Kathy apparently recently got married.
What, in the strip?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So that probably takes out a lot of the dramatic tension and comedic tension. And now it's just like, Kathy's Happy Life, starring Kathy. No, I'm sure she still has a lot of problems, and it's probably still very funny.
Yeah.
Please don't sue me, Kathy.
Oh, I guess I could talk about it. So in a way, all anime and cartoons that we enjoy sort of slowly grew out of strip comics. And American strip comics became popular in Japan, where they kind of adapted previous art styles into newspaper strip styles. Some of them were like real kind of ripoffs of Blondie or whatever was popular at the time, or in their own kind of things. And then that also grew into longer format comics. And if you're interested in reading more about that, you should read A Drifting Life, where it exactly documents the time period where the guy and his brother in the story, like, at the time, there was a postcard comic contest with local newspapers where you would draw a single panel comic on a postcard and send it into the newspaper. And if they printed yours, they would send you, like, a few bucks in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
He and his brother were doing enough of them that, or the main artist was doing enough of them that he was kind of making an extra income for that for his family, who were very poor in post-World War II Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually he became like a manga artist and went on to do more edgy things. And still around and signed my book. But A Drifting Life is really great to also read in terms of like history of like the history of that time period, where the author continually draws in like, these are the films we were watching at the time, this is the kind of music that was popular, this is what was going on in the news, and this is what I was doing.
Now, going back to Japanese strips, one thing that I've had very little exposure to Japanese strip comics and their gag a day, but I know that the film My Neighbors the Imadas was based on a strip.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and that's a really good movie. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think it's really, really cool. Like, you never see like a different style.
It's kind of watercolors design. And like the line quality is much different. It doesn't look like anime. It looks like a newspaper comic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, they translate, but it still has that same sort of, like, normally when you think of a comic strip getting adapted to animation, you imagine it being very sort of cheaply animated, but still has that very lush, you know, feel of a Ghibli cartoon.
Yeah, and it's really, like, it's kind of small gags. There's not a huge overarching plot.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a lot of cartoon movies, like, that are based on TV or another series, it's like, if this is the movie version, it's the big summer adventure where they have to fight the evil ooze that's destroying Paradise Palace or whatever, but not so with,
you know,
like,
what
My
Neighbor's
Theme.
Yes, I do.
Everyone knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Or the Care Bear stare.
But I don't know if that strip has ever been translated or reprinted in for America.
I don't think so. Not that I've ever heard of.
If you own the rights, work it out.
There's a really old, there's one old webcomic. There's Sazae-san. Sazae-san is the longest running animation ever, probably in the world, where there are over thousands of episodes. Apparently the anime is very boring, but if you read the early volumes of the collected strips, you can get them in bilingual editions published by, I think, Kodansha. And we read some of them, but I guess if it's like 15 volumes or more, and if you keep reading them, they're very boring. But the first couple volumes are really interesting, where it's lighthearted, like you would expect a newspaper strip comic to be. But it's also about life after the end of World War II in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's lighthearted, but it's like, oh, there's still some American soldiers hanging around, and everyone's sort of poor and whatever. But
yeah, not much to eat.
Lol jokes about rations. Like,
it is, I don't know, I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised by how clever it was.
Yeah, there's still jokes and all that.
But the anime, from what we've seen of it at least.
Yawners.
Wow, that is dry as dust.
Yeah, our friend who lived in Japan
said. Translated well.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think it's not translated well. This is, again,
it's the kind of thing where it kept going after,
where it is aimed at the middle market that can't, you don't want to set their pulse racing.
Mm-hmm.
You want to give them exactly what they expect, exactly how they expect it.
Right, and the anime is so much longer than the original run of strip comics that it's just the animators coming up with more mild, everyday life ideas.
So it's like an endless filler arc.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like life, you know?
Our friend who grew up in Japan said how they would only watch Sazae-san when absolutely nothing else was on.
Yeah.
Like, no other cartoons were on. All the other shows were adult shows. I guess we'll have to watch Sazae-san. Oh, my God. Because it's always on. There's a weird thing about the way Japanese strip comics are printed now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the newspaper scene works, but there are a lot of four-panel comics in Japan that are very popular. They're four-koma manga. But the way that they're usually printed is in a regular manga magazine, and it'll usually be several pages of four-panel strips. So because it's a few pages, it'll be 8 or 10 or however many set at a time. So it'll usually follow a single continuity, even though there's a gag at the end of each strip.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those are being reprinted in English, like the Lucky Star collection, and Azumanga Daioh. Daioh is the big one that is really popular and famous. And everything, a lot of times other comics seem like pale imitations of Azumanga Daioh. It's like, oh, this is just like Azumanga, but not funny. Because
yeah.
that is typical of the format, where, like, if it's sports day at their school, you'll get 8 strips about sports day. And the next time you read it, it'll be about the cultural festival, because every Japanese school year is the same every year, at every school in Japan, with no variation. And then everyone does the same gag about, nobody wants to vote on anything, and should we do a haunted house this year, or a cafe? After reading enough manga, I kind of feel almost as if I've completed the Japanese school year a bunch of times.
I feel like I've been to the beach
a lot me too.
More than I ever have.
It gets really...
Beach episode.
It gets really weirdly... circles in on itself, where like in a lot of anime and manga, people will go to the beach in the beach episode and they'll smash open a watermelon with a bat and, you know, they'll be blindfolded like it's a pinata or something, which sounds kind of unsanitary. But eventually there are strips in anime where people are like, you know, that always happens in manga, but you never see anyone doing it in real life.
Yeah.
So they're making the watermelon meta joke, and they don't have a watermelon.
Well, aren't watermelons really rare and expensive there?
They're really also expensive true. In Japan, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to go smashing up my expensive exotic fruit with that.
I know, right? That watermelon costs like $30. Bat. I guess they're not that cheap here either, but I grew up on a farm, so their watermelons like everywhere. It's pretty cheap. So, right. So strip comics are a little bit different in that sense.
Yes. You wouldn't happen to have any of those compilations?
Yeah, of course.
Could I borrow one?
Yes.
All right. She's on record.
Yen Press is also publishing a bunch of 4-coma panel comics, that some of which are not very good. Well, and I'm never interested in them. Like, they always say the name of them, and it's always about a sexy, quirky teacher and blah blah blah. And
sounds
like,
good.
Oh right, it's actually aimed at your demographic specifically, 25 to 35 year old
lonely dudes,
lonely guys reading
that's
about
most of Japan. It
idyllic,
seems.
Cute girls.
Uh huh.
Who never seem to menstruate or fight over boys.
That's fine.
Except for high school girls, where they're constantly menstruating.
And they're not really fighting over boys, but they are fighting
about the lack
their
of boys.
One friend who has a boyfriend, and they really hate it.
I find that reflects reality of high school life more than most other things.
Yeah, high school
I've
girls
read.
Is really great.
Yeah, high school girls is awesome. But that's also
Jason Thompson only gave it 2.5 stars.
I know. That also runs
hold that against him for the
that
rest
runs
of
in
life.
A comic that runs in a manga magazine aimed at both girls and boys, which is really weird.
Hmm.
So you get panty flashes, but also really gross. All-girl school jokes, like realistic all-girl school jokes, and not like the other kind of all-girl school in manga and anime is the all-girl school where a boy whose parents founded the school force him to go, but he can only go dressed as a girl.
Classic.
And somehow no one is able.
It is, apparently.
Somehow no one is able to detect that he's a girl, even when they feel him up for a gag several times per week.
Per episode.
Possibly
yeah.
per episode. I'm talking about you, Strawberry Panic.
Well, that's just one of them.
Yeah, that's just one. There's more than one.
They've got some really good prostheses. Japan is technologically years ahead of us.
Yeah, consider I, Me, My Strawberry Eggs. Similar?
Oh, God.
Similar?
Yeah, where a guy in a Booze and Buddies type situation can only teach at this one school, and he's been kicked out of everywhere else if he pretends to be a girl.
Did you say Boozum?
Boozum Buddies?
Bosom?
Bosom Buddies?
Buzzum?
Buzzum?
Bosom?
I don't know how to say this part's getting cut.
Boozum.
Boozum.
Bosom.
This is not a good show either. He can
zonk
only,
zonk. Huh?
He can only teach at the school if he dresses as a woman and mm-hmm. has a choker that alters his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of in love with one of the junior high girls.
That's inappropriate.
It is. In
not
America.
For Japan.
Yeah, in Japan it's okay. All the teachers are apparently really young, and so the age gap is not that bad when you end up having an affair with your teacher.
Underage girls are the national sport there.
Apparently. A national treasure, if you will.
Well, children are a national treasure in every nation.
Right.
But there, they're also sport.
Well, I think in some countries, children are the national labor force as well.
Mm. Yes.
In that case, they're also a treasure.
No, they're a commodity.
Oh, you're right. It's good.
Treasure is the greatest commodity.
I think that's false. I think that's not
are you
thinking true.
You're, is it magic?
Magic is the
is
greatest
magic the greatest
treasure?
Commodity?
What are you talking
magic
about?
Treasure?
No.
Is treasure the greatest magic? Anyway,
no.
We're talking
really
about webcomics.
I think we could probably wrap this up. Like, we've covered most possible angles. It's turned into like a really boring 3-hour-long standard webcomic panel at any convention. Except for the part in the audience where people in the audience shout out the names of webcomics they read. And Noah frowns disapprovingly when someone is like, control, delete. That's not funny.
No, it's not true.
It's not funny.
It's not funny, but usually... So the ones that I have been disappointed with, because we can't end the show unless we get people pissed off at us.
Yeah, scary go round sucks.
So,
VG Kent.
Something positive. There was this guy who was riding me for like years to read something positive.
Yeah, I remember
like,
that.
Finally, I'll do it. Fine, I'll do it. And I read it, and it was not very good.
Yeah, I talked a lot about someone with that. where his ex-girlfriend or something was like, you need to do something more productive than bothering me, so why don't you do a webcomic? Like, why don't you do something positive? And so that's why he started his webcomic.
Oh.
Because he was depressed, and his ex-girlfriend was like, get off my back.
Well, maybe that makes it better.
Like, you have too much
free
time.
I didn't know the backstory.
Yeah, that's all I know about it. I don't actually... I think I might have tried to read it once and found it unfunny as well, so...
So Boo earns to all of these people.
All right. I'm going to mention really quickly some other comics that people should read.
Oh, they should read.
Yes, they should.
Okay, go ahead.
60 Ways to Leave Your Mother. Star-Shaped Rock. American Elf. Creased Comics.
Oh, Creased Comics. That's by Brad Neely, right?
Yes.
Does he do a regular strip?
It's not regular. It seems to pop up sort of randomly.
Does it have an RSS feed?
I don't know.
God damn it.
I don't use that. I go to websites.
Brad Neely is our personal, one of our favorite people, because he is the voice who did Wizard People, Dear Reader, the Harry Potter overdub, and also the amazing George Washington song.
You can find lots of other videos at his website as well.
Yeah, for a while he was working on Adult Swim's web presence site that was something that I forget the name of. It doesn't matter. It doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
I mean, it does exist. It's just not around. He was doing a lot of, like, web-exclusive content for them.
Huh.
A lot of it was crap, unfortunately.
I didn't know that.
Remember we watched a short about a big retarded kid doing something, and it was his very limited animation style.
It wasn't
very good.
Don't remember that, anyway. But whatever.
Overcompensating. Daisy Owl. Let me look at a keyboard.
These sound like band names as well.
There we go.
Oh, because you're looking at the keyboard to remember.
Yeah, this is how I go through them. Oh, Buttersafe. Buttersafe is one of the few ones I was talking to. No, if you read Understanding Comics or any of the Scott McCloud books, and he talks about, you know, the possibilities of websites being really opening up what comics can be because of the idea of the infinite page.
Right. Is that one where you keep scrolling?
Yeah.
Okay, I've seen that before. That really does speak to the possibilities of web space, although in practicality, it's like, I'm so sick of scrolling.
I feel like Buttersafe uses them more effectively than I've seen it used other places, because basically he'll just use it to sort of extend time. You just sort of scroll down, and there'll be, like, long series of similar panels, and, like, you don't know when the final punchline is going to come, because you can sort of keep going. Oh. And I feel like it works much better in, or they use it very effectively for gags.
Oh.
And I feel like that's something that hasn't been exploited.
Like Long Cat?
Yes, like Long Cat.
Yes.
Wait, were you going to mention something?
I was going to mention...
What was that one that we used to read? They had, like, the Janus thing. Not the Janus thing.
I think that was the one that I was...
Okay.
The
Rush Limbaugh eats everything.
Janus Monks. Yeah, E-Sheep was the one that I was going to mention just now, because that also makes use... Although, it's not really...
It's not around anymore, is it?
A webcomic. Well, it's funny, because... It's like the guy was only updating it every couple of months or something, or maybe even once or twice a year, but each update would be an entire work.
Yeah, it was a completed thing.
It's not a webcomic. Definitely a sort of graphic novel
on
the web.
I like their Pokemon deck that was like a parody of the Pokemon deck side, but it was like all monsters from the Book of Revelations.
Yeah.
But it was exactly laid out like the Pokemon website, like if you were looking for different kind of Pokemon.
Yeah, there's some really good stuff on there.
Yeah.
And
some of the comics went on for way too long. Like.
Yeah, well, Rush Limbaugh Eats Everything was...
kept going.
Yeah, it did. I was actually surprised.
I was reading it in my student work job, which is how I read a lot of webcomics, because those are jobs where you don't really do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, I was surprised how it just kept reading it for like an hour.
Was that when you were at the NYU Animation Studios?
No, because I didn't really have a computer that was connected to the internet at that point. That was when I briefly worked in the education computer lab building. But I also read other webcomics that way in my previous computer lab work study jobs. Did you have more to name?
No, I was just going to say that's where you and I met when you were working at the animation studio.
Yes, because I put up an ad for my zine, Ridiculously Underground Comics.
Mm-hmm. And then we met again several years later because I was living with Noah.
Right, and then I started living with your brother as my roommate.
Yes, after I had moved out.
Yeah, very small world.
Yep.
Yeah, and here we are.
Tiny. Still hanging out.
Yeah. To think they said that this wouldn't last.
I think that brings it back around.
There you go.
3-hour conversation about webcomics.
There's your stinger.
bookends.